The spiritual theme of the month is brokenness. Do you remember the first time you realized that something was seriously wrong with the world? Maybe you witnessed the abuse of somebody you cared about. Maybe you yourself were violated. I have experienced brokenness, and not just with a cracked ankle. When I lived in Chiapas, Mexico, I had a coworker who was a great friend from college days. One day she was on a walk up in our favorite mountain park with the overview of down below. Suddenly, two masked men jumped out of the bushes, pulled her in, and sexually violated her. I'll never forget, we got the phone call from the hospital asking us to come. When we got there, looking into my friend's eyes and hearing her story, the pain seared forever in my heart. I can't imagine her heart, what it went through. Through ministry, I have cried with families who lost loved ones to alcoholism and drug addiction. I have prayed with folks whose family members were torn away with murder. I have accompanied people who murdered and raped. For me, brokenness is barely a metaphor. It's more of its own living, breathing dynamic amongst sentient beings. And I believe that many of us can identify with these thoughts and feelings if we really work at exploring this topic. Up to this point, I have not taken the opportunity to examine the life and death of Joe Paterno in the pulpit, but when we arrived at the theme of brokenness, I thought it was the right time. This is not to say that I think Joe Paterno's career and life are defined only by brokenness, quite the contrary. Joe Paterno was head coach of Penn State football from 1966 until last year. He created tremendous football teams. At the time of his death, Paterno held the record for the most NCAA Division I victories by a coach, 409. Five of his teams were undefeated, two were national champions. But winning football games was not the only reason that when the men of white and blue ran out on the field, hundreds of thousands of Penn State fans across the nation felt pride. Paterno was a strong leader, in my opinion, who over the decades built a program with core values of hard work, ethics, and academic rigor. Joe Paterno mentored young men, helping them to develop strong character. He and his wife, Sue, donated over $4 million to Penn State through the years. I did some campus ministry at Penn State, and in 2000, they were saying that the new innovative library was built by Joe Paterno. He was the key leadership gift, I think, of $1 million in the 90s for that building. Yet something went very wrong in Joe Paterno and Penn State's world. In 2002, a graduate assistant, now Penn State's wide receivers coach, saw a naked boy about the age of 10 in the shower with his hands up against the wall being subjected to a violation. I'll say it less. I've already said enough because we have children in the room. But it was assistant coach Jerry Sandusky violating a 10-year-old. Joe Paterno was told about this event and did nothing. A grand jury eventually identified credible witnesses accounting for up to a dozen cases of sexual abuse by assistant coach Sandusky. Mr. Paterno was totally in charge of his football program. There was zero ambiguity in their governance system. And in taking no action, he made major mistakes, which I think should have been punishable by law. Just like any leader of any organization should be responsible for such events, including myself. But Paterno should not be blamed alone. It seems that he, along with at least one school counselor, administrators, players, and coaches, all had enough information and a chance to step in and stop the patterns of violation. But they did not. Athletic director Tim Curley at one point characterized the incident of raping a 10-year-old in the shower as horsing around. Now, imagine if you had a 10-year-old that happened to and the AD described it like that. And I think that's how we should all feel about children on the campus of this excellent state institution. We should be very proud and care as Pennsylvanians. Be grateful for Penn State. When we tell our own stories and pay attention to the world around us, including what happened at Penn State, we come to realize, in my opinion, that brokenness is consistent in human experience. Here's a great quote about brokenness from my friend who has been in our pulpit, UU Minister Barbara Tenho Wells. She said, "Some folks, when confronted by this challenging reality, that brokenness is always going to be around us, decide not to believe it. These folks may develop a web of lies in which they live. Others determine that if anything breaks, then everything breaks." And sometimes they go around breaking things and people in their lives just to prove their own theory to be true. Not long after the scandal broke, Mr. Paterno died of cancer. But I believe that he also died of a broken heart. He did not talk much in the press about the crisis, probably because the lawyers told him not to. But at one point, he did tell a Washington Post reporter, "In hindsight, I wish I had done more. I didn't know exactly how to handle it, and I was afraid to do something that might jeopardize the university process." I'll bet he was afraid of more than that. Must have been very overwhelming. I would imagine he was afraid the whole house could collapse. At some level in Mr. Paterno's head, there must have been a web of lies. From all accounts, that it seems he never fully acknowledged all the pain that was caused in his program. He didn't acknowledge his program was broken, and thus he impeded people's ability to make changes needed to move towards safety, healing, and health. Now, Mr. Paterno and the president of the school were both very appropriately fired, not necessarily done with the exact right mechanism, but they should have lost their jobs, and they did, in my opinion. Yet in the aftermath, many alumni gatherings were dominated by folks talking about how outraged they were that Paterno was fired. And not many of these folks gathered were focused on the broken system which allowed recurring crimes against children and youth. Okay, so I am talking about heavy stuff today. Big, hard impact on human lives within the context of brokenness. But brokenness is a spectrum as well, let's say from 1 to 10. And let's say that 10-year-old boy experienced a 10 on the brokenness scale, body, mind, and spirit, most probably. But you can have something which is lower but important. You could have a part of the best friendship in your life be a part of it be broken at a 4, and that's important. A part of your marriage could be broken at a 5. A part of. It doesn't mean your whole marriage is broken. A part of your marriage. Edna's body broke. Didn't mean her spirit broke. But she had to be mindful. You could be the victim. You could be participating in the cause. You could be a witness. Or sometimes cause and effect are really complicated to figure out. There's no exact science. The point is, we live in a world that is wonderfully beautiful in so many ways, so many blessings, and it's also terribly broken and wounded in others. And in this, there's not much difference between Joe Paterno and us. Likewise, because we are imperfect beings, every person has aspects of beauty and brokenness within them. There is not much difference between Joe Paterno and us. So this month we're looking at how we can acknowledge our imperfections and how that can be a path towards healing and wholeness. I offer a prayer, which is a tool for me in this, in my own life and in ministry? Serenity prayer. If you know it, you can say it along with me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, of course, you do not have to use the word God. You could put whatever you want, life, breath, spirit of life. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. It's tough many times to know the difference, but in our religious life, I hope that we'll do everything possible to, in situations like Penn State, and to put them in the category of finding the courage to change the things we can. Sometimes we're called to dig deep and use all our might to say, this is unacceptable, and we commit to this not happening again at our state institution or in the Catholic Church, where we have laws that should be applied to people who are abusing children, as they have been in the Catholic Church. Never in the Unitarian Universalist Church. If you think something's going on wrong with anybody being abused, come to me, and if you don't think me or the president are handling right, you call the police. Unacceptable. And this should hold in our work, our schools, our neighborhoods. For people who have been hurt, people who have been hurt can often benefit from acknowledge the brokenness in the body, the mind, or the soul, and acknowledge you need and deserve help. You have inherent dignity and worth and deserve help. Could come from your church, from your minister, from your caring team, from therapy, from a friend. Could be a good time to re-engage. What spiritual practices in your life, how are you connecting with the miracle life in a regular way that helps you deal with hurt? Could be knitting, alone or with a friend, gardening, getting your hands in the dirt, breaking that winter dirt open with a shovel for the first time this spring. And it could that could be connected. It could be good to just pay your troubles no mind and move on with positive activities. That could work. But the point is, be mindful, be pragmatic. Is your approach to dealing with brokenness or the harm done to you, is it working for you? And if not, maybe we can talk about it. Sometimes we go through soul-breaking experiences which require mindful healing. Author and physician Rachel Naomi Remen spent time in pediatric oncology. In that practice, she helped many very sick children, and she helped some of them die. She helped some of their families help the children die. And over time in her dreams, Rachel would specifically remember lab results, pictures on the bedside of the kids' table, the names of their stuffed animals. She would hear again entire conversations, word by word, filled with hope and fear, loss and love. But over the months and years, the doctor's dream started to turn, and eventually she was overwhelmed with what she wasn't letting herself feel, deep sadness and pain and helplessness, and she would wake up sobbing uncontrollably for hours. Eventually, she started to move away from taking death so personally, and she no longer saw it as her personal failure, but more of a universal and natural mystery. But she had to deal with her broken heart from being there with people suffering. Once again, that's a big, heavy example of a pediatric oncologist, but we have stuff like that in our own lives many times, maybe a couple numbers down on the scale. It's important to lift up today that sometimes it's the things that are broken are best to be accepted. Now, a story of Dan Gottlieb, he's a radio guy who is a quadriplegic after a major accident. His grandson, Sam, is autistic. They spend lots of time together. Most people know that Dan has some problems because he's in an electric wheelchair, but Sam, it takes time. Sometimes it's when he runs into kids or the plans get changed on him that they folks realize he's autistic. The two of them have spent a lot of quality time together. They've talked about their anger, of how the world is unfair, it doesn't make sense, but also realize sometimes life is just too good to pass up. So one day, grandson Sam asked the nurse, could you put my grandpa on the couch so I could sit in his lap while we watch a movie? And eventually they weren't really watching the movie, they were just looking into each other's eyes and enjoying it. And by accepting their problems, like life's lack of fairness, they opened up to a great love that moved their hearts. Sometimes putting it aside helps us to experience the power of now and the joy so strong you just want to sing to the trees. Okay, here's the spiritual exercise of the month that the small groups are doing. I think it's a really good one. I encourage you all to contemplate doing this exercise. Find a small stone and hold it in your hand. Imagine that the stone is a burden you are carrying, the burden of a past mistake that you made or someone else made, or an imperfection that has weighed you down for too long. And hold that stone and imagine how your life might be better without this burden. And imagine what your life would look like if you forgive your own brokenness with care and compassion. And when you're ready, put the stone down. And you may choose to keep it around you so you can see, yep, there it is. I'm not carrying it anymore. Or you might want to put it out in the park or in nature or somewhere where you're not going to see it. Our religion must exalt our experiences of a world like luscious Garden of Eden, where every tree grows that is pleasant to sight and good for food. A river waters the garden and then flows out to form majestic riverheads. But our religion must also help us to acknowledge that many times we eat a forbidden fruit and a snake bites. And many times the snake bites even when you were being good and living with self-discipline and respecting others. May our religious community continue to be a place where we can come together to reduce unnecessary pain, separation, helplessness, and lack of choice. May we all help to empower and embolden each other. May we all serve as channels of peace and joy. Blessings be.